Talking About Everything podcast with Harry Hawk.
All right, Steve, we're back. Thank you for sticking around.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm sure you've talked about this before, but how did you get started with Chain Reactions?
So essentially, when I was a kid, I was just always interested in all sorts of different toys, including Hot Wheels, Kinects, Marble Tracks, Dominoes, things like that. And one day I just decided to, I just had this thought, what if I just combined all these things together and created something really cool involving all of them? And, you know, just got creative, built my first Chain Reaction and put it on YouTube. And over the years, they got more and more complex and I kept up with it and led me to America's Got Talent and a lot more.
That's certainly where I first came to see you, was on America's Got Talent. Friendly with some of the folks who are involved as regular members of the call-in audience on the Howard Stern show, the Whack Pack, particularly Marianne from Brooklyn. So I've been able to see some of the live tapings and stuff. To me, that by itself is fascinating, to see a TV show shot and produced on that scale. But what was it like for you to go through that process of auditioning and being selected?
So it's pretty interesting how I got to be on the show. I originally had no intention of trying out for the show. I really didn't think that Chain Reactions could be featured on the show until one of the producers found my YouTube channel and they asked me to audition. So I went home and built one of my best Chain Reactions and recorded a video and sent that to the producers. And they loved it. So they sent me to the celebrity judge round. Where I built one in front of Howard Stern, Howie Mandel, Mel B, and Heidi Klum, and got four yeses from them, which was really exciting. For the first time, I had like a really huge audience for my machines, getting to share what I love to do, and people really, really enjoyed it. After that, I went to Las Vegas round, and I got sent straight through that round without even having to do a second audition. And then after that, I was in the quarterfinals, and I made a machine which started with dominoes and ended with fireworks, and I'm always going to be proud of that machine. That was one of the most complicated ones I've ever done, and I was really happy that everything worked perfectly. It was pretty stressful having enough time to set everything up. Like the night before the performance, I was at Radio City until like midnight just putting everything together and making sure that everything would work perfectly the next day.
I certainly remember watching that on television. It was fantastic, and I think it made for obviously great television. What was it like that day of? You said you were a little bit nervous the night before.
So basically, they gave me some room off stage to start setting things up on the tables that I use. I started putting pieces together and gluing things together. And then the night before, in about 4 hours from 8 to midnight, I carried all the tables to the stage and officially set everything up. And then the show was the next day. And like I said, I was pretty nervous. Obviously, like, Chain Reactions are something that hasn't really been done for a live audience very often because they're so fragile and it's hard to get them to work perfectly every time you try it. So to be doing it in front of 12 million people, you can imagine how nervous I was. And especially because I had never done any live events except for one before I was on America's Got Talent. And as people were filing into Radio City, I was even getting nervous that like the sheer like vibration due to all the people talking and entering the music hall might like cause something to accidentally fall down. But luckily, everything worked out fine.
That's awesome. If you haven't been in Radio City Music Hall, if you're listening to this, it's worth visiting. You can still see a movie there or a concert, but it's a absolutely massive venue. It's like any other movie theater, just, you know, I can hold 3,000 or 4,000, maybe 5,000 people. Steve, when you were doing that, did they pre-record it and then play it for the audience, play it on television, or was it actually totally live?
So they didn't do it during the normal show, but they did it a few hours earlier, and they invited just people off the streets of New York who were passing by to come in and fill in the live audience. And they only filled up half of the audience. So they only show like the bottom section of Radio City. And so that way they had a live video of my machine with the live audience. And then during the show later, they just played that video.
Well, trust me, I could talk about this particular aspect all day, but it may be boring somebody out there, but I think it's fascinating. Were you able to at least get like an amazing video from them of your work that you can use? I guess you must have some kind of highlight reel.
Yeah, I mean, I saved all the videos of my performances. I can't like officially use them because of copyrights, but I share them with people all the time and use them as my best example.
Well, it's fascinating. Again, it brought you to my attention. And I remember at that time being able to chat with you on Twitter. You're active on social media. I assume you saw a pretty big bump in your social audience at that time. How has that been going for you? Have you been able to retain some of those folks?
Yeah, it was really exciting to see a lot of people get interested in what I do and all my social media accounts. And I think I've retained a very good number of all the people who saw me on America's Got Talent. Lots of people are still commenting on all the things that I post to this day.
Well, if you are a fan of Sprice or Steve Price and his amazing chain reaction machine, certainly would encourage you to share and support this Kickstarter that he's got going on. Steve, what I want to ask then, or really start with a quick discussion, I have this theory I call entanglement from quantum entanglement. It relates to marketing. It's about historically a business had a very hard time connecting over time and distance with an audience. If you were a local business, you had your local audience. You know, many years later, you might have had something like a Sears catalog. They made some kind of connection to the audience. But this idea that you're able to go on America's Got Talent, historically, if you'd been on the television show, any television show, you'd never have been able to retain your fans because they would have just seen you and they might have recognized your face and said hello on the street, but they wouldn't have any way of connecting to you. So in light of that sort of theory, having just explained that to you, do you see, is there anything that you can do or are doing to kind of keep and maintain that connection with your social audience?
I definitely have to agree with that theory because I feel like there are a lot of people who really enjoyed what I did on America's Got Talent, but didn't even end up going online to search for what I do. But anytime I meet people at the events that I do, I hand out business cards with all my social media, my YouTube channel. I say, check out all my videos on my YouTube channel. I've built hundreds of these and you can see all of them on my YouTube channel. And people are like, really? Wow. So most people have really only seen the America's Got Talent machines because that was obviously a huge audience. But a lot of them probably don't know that I have hundreds of videos on my YouTube channel with all these chain reactions and domino projects I've built. So I just continue to share that with everyone that I can. And I try to be very personal with all of the fans on my social media too.
Well, that's obviously important in any business of how you interact with your customers. And obviously in the hospitality industry, we're quite big on hospitality, but it works for artists and everybody else. Steve, another question is, are you using some of the newer social media networks? I'm thinking particularly about Snapchat, Plague, Secret, and some of these other ones, but especially Snapchat with their 24-hour story feature. Are you putting out and looking for audiences there?
I only use Snapchat for personal use. I've been considering using it for others, but I haven't really gotten into it yet.
Well, if I could give you a quick marketing consult, I would say, you know, obviously it's your demographic. It's generally those under 25. Eventually, I suppose the parents will show up, but it's because of that it lets you tell a story. That story can, rather than disappear instantly, can hang around for 24 hours. I think it would be absolutely fascinating when you're doing a detonation, when you've created some particular project, to tell that story through Snapchat and to try to find an audience there who would really love to just see that evolve over the day from perhaps an empty room all the way to a completely detonated chain reaction.
Right. And whether we end up doing it on Snapchat or YouTube, we are planning on filming the entire setup for the Incredible Science Machine and then creating a really cool time lapse of going from an empty warehouse to the world's largest chain reaction.
Well, I certainly, whatever you do for the Incredible Science Machine should certainly be on YouTube without a doubt. But you should consider using Snapchat for that and other projects, which then on your site, it mentions that you do some events at museums. Can you tell us a little bit what that's like?
So basically museums, they just want to draw interest in their museum. And so some of them will hire me to create chain reactions and domino projects and detonate them in front of an audience. And then basically when I'm setting up in the museum, people can walk past throughout the day and see what I'm working on. So I think that's a pretty cool thing for people to see the actual setup process of the machine. And then we give a certain time when the detonation will be, and everyone who wants to see it gathers around, and we do a short demonstration, and the entire thing goes off, and then I'll do meet and greets with everyone. I usually give out free autographed dominoes to anyone who comes, and sometimes I will even do workshops at the museum for people who want to learn how to build their own chain reactions.
Well, that sounds fascinating. Has it been mostly in Michigan, or have you been able to tour around to some of the larger science museums in the country?
Right now, I've only done a few since America's Got Talent. Some are in Michigan. One was in New York. This summer, I'm also going to be going across the country to a couple other museums doing live detonations as well.
Well, don't tell if you're flying the TSA that you're on your way to do a detonation, I suppose. But do you work with the museum staff? Like, they have an education team? You know, do they try to highlight more of the science or engineering behind what you do? Or is it literally, as you said, just to try to get more folks into the museum?
I think it's more towards the entertainment of getting to see one of these chain reactions in action. But if when any of the guests come up and meet me after the show, I'm happy to explain to them all the planning and physics that goes into this. And I love answering questions about everything I do.
So on the topic of the physics, obviously there's a tremendous amount of energy that gets released during the detonation. I mean, that is sort of the technical definition of a detonation. Have you or anyone else sort of done the math to figure out, you know, how much energy or how much air is displaced or any of the kind of physical implications of a detonation?
A lot of it is just having a good understanding of the physical concepts, maybe not doing direct computations to solve what you're going to be building. But I have been considering doing a little bit of studying about like domino structures, studying how tall they have to be in order to fall completely, about like the friction between two dominoes that are stacked together, and figuring out what sort of force you need to knock down different size domino structures, so that I will make sure anytime I do a project, I'll make sure I have enough force acting on the structure to knock it down. But there hasn't been a ton of actual research and computation involved in it as of now, but I'd definitely like to start doing that in the future and maybe create some really cool YouTube videos explaining all the physics behind it.
On your YouTube channel, do you collab with anybody?
Yeah, I haven't done one in a while, but I've been collaborating with a lot of the people are the builders in the Incredible Science Machine. We've been creating what's called a screen link, and that's where you have two or more different builders working on a project, and one person will create a section of the chain reaction that comes in from the left side of the screen. All the events take place, and then it goes out to the right side of the screen, and then the other person starts their video with the exact same thing that you ended with, and then it looks like they're linked together. So that's pretty much how all the chain reaction artists and domino builders have been able to collab so far. There haven't really been any opportunities for us to get together and create something really big, but that's what this event is all about.
Well, there's definitely some guys who do like the 1 minute physics and stuff like that. You might be able to get that involved or create software. Are you undergraduate or a graduate student?
I'm an undergraduate. I'm a junior right now.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you're keeping your studies up. If you do get to, a master's, you might find a pretty interesting master's thesis in just the physics and, I guess I would say the physics of domino chain reactions or something like that is probably at least a small paper there.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to do. I haven't had the chance to intertwine my chain reactions with my education very much. However, I've done a few projects for different classes that involve chain reactions.
Do you have to do a capstone project to graduate?
Yeah, I am taking some design classes right now. Senior year, I'll also be taking a lot of design classes. And the whole basis of that class is focused around different projects for the class.
Well, hopefully you'll find a way to weave in these domino things. Hopefully you'll find a way to link in the domino chain reactions to your education. I guess I really want to dive in a little bit more into the Rube Goldberg kinds of devices. Obviously everything is physical. You have parts touching other parts. Is there, I assume, more complexity to the Rube Goldberg machines?
Yeah. The complex part comes in when you take different elements, different everyday objects that are not intended to be used together, but you want to create a way where you take advantage of the physical properties of that object to use them together. A lot of times it's something that you want to create something that the audience would never expect, like, oh, I didn't know this object could be used like that. And just like figuring out how to draw the audience's attention with different reactions.
Are there particular kinds of artifacts that you like to work with? And obviously you're working in three dimensions and you have things swinging and moving, and do you have a preference?
Honestly, you can pretty much incorporate any object you'd like into a chain reaction. I just like to use like everyday objects that are very unexpected, like an umbrella or a hairdryer or a bike tire, things like that.
Now, anybody, if you're not quite sure what we're talking about, obviously if you Google Rube Goldberg, you'll find it, but also you may know as a child the game of Mousetrap, which essentially has you create something like this. I'm a fan of the TV show Elementary, and they start off the show with sort of, I assume, is a fake Rube Goldberg device with all kinds of guns going off and things. What might, besides the fireworks, are there any other sort of dangerous things that you've incorporated?
Let's see. I've used fire in my machines twice now. Other things that are dangerous are mouse traps, scissors, sometimes hammer swing. I built a machine on the Rachel Ray show, and they wanted me to create a machine that makes a mess in their kitchen, so then they could do a segment on cleaning it up. And one part of the machine has a hammer that swings down, and it smacks a glass off the table, and that hits the floor and shatters. So nothing too dangerous, but a few things there, here and there.
And earlier you mentioned chemical reactions, these kind of using some of these exothermic reactions where some large piece of foam or something is created?
Yeah, I've done a chemical reaction in a machine called elephant toothpaste, where you have hydrogen peroxide and a catalyst, and it breaks down the hydrogen peroxide and creates a ton of oxygen. So then when you add dish soap to that hydrogen peroxide, then it starts to bubble up and add food coloring, obviously, and it creates this huge foaming effect and fills up the entire container and then spills out over the table.
Well, that sounds very exciting. What can you tell me about going to school in Michigan, and particularly about being a college student with a YouTube channel? Obviously, you're not necessarily the most famous YouTuber in the world, but you do have this sort of a little bit of fame. Does that impact your college life at all?
Yeah, so the number one concern with being a college student and a YouTuber at the same time is my YouTube videos require a lot of time and space to build these things. And when I'm at college living in a small apartment, I don't have very much time or space to build in. So it's always disappointing me. I'm always wishing that I could just be building something really cool at that moment. And obviously having tons of schoolwork and homework to keep me busy is kind of drives me crazy at some points, but I do really love the things that I'm studying in mechanical engineering. And, you know, also when I'm on campus, maybe once every few weeks, someone will come up to me and be like, "You look familiar. Do I know you?" And then I'll be like, "Yeah, you probably watched America's Got Talent, right?" And then they go like, "Oh, yeah."
Well, it's great to be recognized. And for your own future educational goals, or rather, I should say, after your education, when you're out there, do you see yourself getting some kind of engineering job, or do you hope to try to turn the chain reactions and their detonation into a livelihood, or is it maybe more of a hobby?
So chain reactions are really my dream, and so I'd like to do that as a career, but I'd also like to tie in my mechanical engineering. So my idea right now is when I graduate, I want to start a toy company where I design chain reaction kits for kids to take all these different pieces and they all fit together, and you can create your own chain reaction in whatever way you want, and sort of like sort of like Legos or Kinects, well-known building toys, except these are something that are made for specifically for chain reactions, and then you can build them in whatever way you want, and then you get to see a very cool effect and see them all work together when you're done building it.
Well, that sounds awesome. I think the toy business and the educational toy business is quite an interesting thing. I think most parents are looking for something that will really trigger their kids' imagination, but this sounds like toys that would be suitable for all ages, adults included.
Yeah, definitely. And it's definitely something that's very closely linked with education. It's something that you could probably have in a school classroom and use as part of a lesson plan as well. But it would be much more interesting than some of the other lesson plans that you might do regarding physics and engineering and stuff like that.
That's what we call high impact learning, place-based learning. There's all these buzzwords that are out there, but no one wants to be standing for 2.5 hours and lecturing. We want students to do things. So in these design classes that you've mentioned, is this, you're going to do some CAD/CAM and kind of design some of the elements or components of these toys? I mean, is it something that's actually being worked on, or is it still just a far off dream?
Yeah, I'm actually already designing some of the products I want to produce on CAD. And I've even done some prototyping using a 3D printer. I haven't made too much progress on prototyping, but I've got a lot of designs, a lot of drawings about the things that I want to design.
Have you thought about open sourcing some of this? Or obviously you're hoping to make a living from this, but there are certain industries where open source, say like Android and Google, have worked out really well, and perhaps others where it hasn't, but do you have any interest in open source technology?
I haven't really thought of it, to be honest.
It's on some level a marketing gimmick, and on another level, it's giving back by making something non-proprietary. Obviously, I think most of the toy companies love keeping their things patented, their design patents, and all of that. But it's something to think about because you can help really create a groundswell. Again, I think Android is probably the biggest, most successful open source project, but there's a lot of other ones. Facebook has open sourced the designs for their data centers, and there's a lot of other projects and things. But when you're planning the games and the just thinking about your future, do you have a price point in mind? I mean, have you done any kind of market research, or is it just experimental at this point?
I haven't done any market research at this point. It's really just been 100% on design right now. And then once I graduate, I hopefully can have all the designs ready to go, and then I can look for different methods of producing them.
Well, one potential audience, again, to give you a quick consult, this will sound perhaps a bit strange, but if you made some products that were a little bit easier to set up in the sense of a wider base or easier to handle, you might find an audience in older folks, not only folks who are still by themselves, but those in assisted living and other kinds of environment. They need to keep their physical dexterity and their mental dexterity, and being able to kind of plan and create and do these sorts of things may have both a therapeutic and a entertainment impact on their lives. So you should definitely think well outside of the box.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea.
Well, Steve, I don't have a lot of other questions. We've gone through everything. I just want to come back to, if you could quickly talk about the two records that you're trying to break, the most dominoes ever toppled in America, and the world record for the most steps in a Rube Goldberg machine. Just talk about those records and how you want to blow them out of the water.
So, like I've said before, there aren't really a lot of opportunities for people in chain reaction and domino building. And so they've been more popular in Europe than America. But back in 1979 was the last time that the American domino record was broken. At that time, it was the world record. But to this day, it's still the American record. It's 169,000 dominoes. Together, me and all the builders own about 150,000 dominoes, and we're hoping to connect with a domino company to make up the rest. And our goal is that we can set up 200,000 dominoes and have maybe 90-95% of them successfully fall down within the machine. And then the other record we want to break is the world's largest chain reaction, and that one was set in 2012, I believe, by Purdue College. A bunch of engineers built a huge chain reaction, and that's measured by the amounts of steps in the machine. Their record is 300, which I haven't heard back from Guinness yet on exactly how they define what a step is, but 300 steps sounds like something we could very easily beat in this incredible science machine.
Well, I wish you luck on breaking those records. If you could once again tell everybody where to find you and where to find the Kickstarter. I believe you want everybody to go to spricemachines.com. That's SPRICE machines.com. Am I correct?
Yep, at spricemachines.com, there will be a link to the Kickstarter, as well as links to my YouTube channel and all the projects I've ever worked on.
What's the ending date for the Kickstarter?
I believe it's April 20th.
Of 2015. So this is being recorded early in April 2015. So obviously, if you're hearing this in 2016 or 17, you can go find out what happened. But if you're listening to this in April, please, we need your support. And obviously, it'd be fantastic to help Steve and 15 other kinetic and chain reaction artists come together and spend an amazing couple of days making things and destroying them. Steve, is there any question that I haven't asked? Is there anything that you'd like to mention that I now that you have the opportunity, please go ahead.
Well, just wanted to add that me and the other builders would really appreciate donations to the Kickstarter. It would really go a long way towards helping one of our dreams come true and creating another outlet for kinetic artists.
Well, Steve, thank you for spending some of your time. I'm sure you've got tests or midterms, or maybe you're on break, but I appreciate you spending some of your morning with me. This is Harry Hawk. This has been Talking About Everything. You can find this and other podcasts on talkingabouteverything.com. Hopefully try to do some kind of YouTube video of this. And so you may be finding this in several different places, but please go to the links, check out Steve's Kickstarter. And if you're hearing this later in the year, certainly look and see what's happened. And is there a date in mind for this, the incredible science machine?
We just announced the date about 6 minutes ago. I just published the video announcing the date. It's July
18th, 2015. July 18th, 2015, yep. Folks. If you're going to be in the Metro Detroit area and you like to watch dominoes fall, or if you like to see 15 people sweat and pray that their hard work is going to pay off with a big bunch of chain reactions, then you definitely are going to want to go. And of course, you can get tickets through the Kickstarter. Again, once again, Steve, thank you for joining me today, and bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My name is Chuck Fresh, and I am being paid to thank you for listening to Talking About Everything with Harry Hawk. Harry wants to hear from you on Twitter at HHawk or HarryHawk@gmail.com. And now, a word from our sponsor, Life Extension Coach and favorite chef. Hawk Digital Marketing is focused on bringing brands and people together. We build communities of interest based on trust and transparency, where consumers and brands can converse, learn, discuss, or solve problems together, while creating a long-term connection, entanglement, between you and your customers. Once connected, we help you engage, communicate, sell, present, educate, and inform. Evolve your communications with us. HawkSocialMarketing.com.